Welcome, St. Louis and beyond, to Five Questions, a critical mass for the visual arts podcast, in which we ask artists five offbeat questions to get at the heart of their take on their work, St. Louis, and the art world at large. Before we get started, I'm going to give you a little bit of information on our interviewee this time, Megan Grubb. Megan works of sculpture and installation that explore the non-rational and intuitive responses of wonder and anxiety, investigating what is at stake when we engage with the fringe of our conscious experience. Grubb focuses on the ways that we respond both physically and emotionally to precarious situations. She observes and questions the potential realities that arise from the experience within confounding environments and how memory, the subconscious, and direct perception mix to produce sensory response. Grubb's work draws on art and architecture, research into literature, perceptual psychology, optics, and the natural environment. Her practice generates new questions and strategies on interrupting the built environment, bending our expectations of physical space, and creating opportunities for psychological and conceptual vertigo. Grubb intends to leverage the unease in the relationship between humans and the physical spaces we inhabit, making work that may prove at once playfully reassuring and profoundly disquieting. Megan Grubb's exhibition record includes group and solo shows, collaborations, and site-specific installations. Her work has been exhibited internationally in Norway, Finland, Spain, and Thailand, and nationally at the Sculpture Center in Cleveland, Ohio, the Shoshana Wayne Gallery in Los Angeles, Heaven Gallery in Chicago, and the Urban Institute for Contemporary Art in Grand Rapids, Michigan. She's received numerous awards and grants, including the American Scandinavian Foundation Fellowship in 2012-13, the Regional Arts Commission Artist Fellowship in 2015, the Creative Stimulus Award, the Alice Cole Award, and recent nominations for the Joan Mitchell Foundation Painters and Sculptors Grant, as well as the Joan Mitchell Foundation Emerging Artist Grant in 2016. Megan Grubb received her MFA in Art and Design from the University of Michigan in 2012 and her BA in History in Studio Art from Wellesley College in 2005. So welcome, Megan. Five questions. I'm just gonna jump in with these. So you know it's the same five questions every time.
Yeah.
For a while. Yeah. Why do you do this to yourself? Why art?
It's a good question. It's kind of a loaded question. So I could turn around and say, like, why wouldn't you do this to yourself? Like,
right?
You'd be crazy not to.
Right.
Right? I don't know. It's something that I certainly didn't know. I didn't always know that I would do. But at some point between college and going to grad school, I realized that I needed to try to make art. I needed to try to really be an artist and to fully commit to that in order to know that it wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And I still haven't figured out that it's not going to work.
And let me add something onto that, because how do you figure out when or if it has or hasn't worked? I mean, how do you even make that distinction?
I don't know. I don't know if you will. That might be part of the paradox.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things that I grew up on never thinking that pursuing a career in art was practical.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that says something about, you know, where I was raised, the community I was raised in, the family. And that's not to say that they're not supportive. I think it's just kind of a slightly more conventional or traditional idea of mm-hmm. what a career is and what that means. So I never went to school thinking that that's what I would do, although I always took art courses because it was so enjoyable and it was meaningful. And then later I realized the utility in having that, those skills and those techniques to ask questions and to think about problems that I couldn't think about in other ways, that I couldn't just discuss in a conversation or write about in a paper or something like that. But again, it really, really, it took time to get there. And it's only in retrospect that I look back at, you know, undergrad, and I think about how I studied history. That was my major instead of art. Because I thought that was more practical.
Mm-hmm.
And now I realize that's not more practical. Like, most things at a liberal arts college are not more practical. You know, unless it's, you know, medicine or law or something like that, that kind of has a clear trajectory. Really, you know, art is no less practical than a lot of social sciences or liberal arts or things like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And art history is no more practical than history or art together.
No. Yeah.
So that kind of sort of leads into the next question. Which of your works do you think is most likely to be in a suburban basement or is already in a suburban basement, as has been the case thus far?
Sure. I don't know with any certainty if any of my works are in a suburban basement. I do know most of my work isn't very collectible. It's not very commercial. So, you know, I'm trying to like tally up the number of works from the last 7 or 8 years or so that are even like in someone's possession. And they really aren't, it really isn't that many. But with some of the larger installations I've built, one of the kind of most gratifying, exciting responses that I've received at, you know, openings or receptions has been someone coming up to me in regards to some kind of like weird spatial distortion thing that I've built, like something in light and darkness or something. And they'll say to me, like, will you build this in my basement?
Uh-huh.
And it makes me, like, it gives me such joy because I've found this person that feels as, you know, geeky and excited, and they want to, like, relive that feeling of uncertainty or joy or wonder, whatever it is that was provoked in them in the experience of the piece, of the installation. And they want to put it in a dark corner of their basement and, you know, like, go down there every once in a while.
Yeah. That's kind of a different question with installation and sculpture, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 And so some of the works that you had at the Critical Mass show, you had these sort of drawings and kind of like almost like documents of the process.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was a really interesting sort of segue into, I mean, even though there wasn't a like complete
full-size installation, yeah,
that was still, I don't know. I thought that was actually, that even that would be effective, if not in a suburban basement, but just on a wall somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I love process. I love looking at process, and it's really, really important in creating my works because there isn't a whole lot of improvisation in creating them. They're really planned. They're really designed. They're very much like iterated, and so over the months, usually months of building something or developing like a large scale piece, when I go back and I kind of accumulate all of those drawings, it says a lot about the piece that the final work doesn't say, that it can't. And so I think I love representations of drawings and things like that. Those are exciting to me.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move to, I don't know, I don't want to say the political, the sort of social context of your art. What do you think needs to happen here in St. Louis, either for art specifically or just maybe on a larger scale than that?
That's a really, really, really loaded question.
It is.
It's
true.
When I think about that question, like every answer that I come up with, I also come up with a counter answer to it. So it's really hard to like make a statement that feels complete, not that any statement is, but in St. Louis in particular, I feel like there are a lot of good things happening and then a lot of things not happening. Mm-hmm. And a lot of discussion around problems that have existed for a long time. And so in some ways there's more awareness than ever, and yet the problem is still huge. And I think that relates to both art and artists in the arts community and just the community at large.
Sure.
So in arts more specifically, I think there's, like in the last few years in some ways, in the last 5 years or so, and granted, I've only been here for about 5 years, so this is all my perspective from somebody who's still like a little bit fresh to St. Louis.
Right.
I don't have a long history, and I haven't seen like the longer arc of the arts community, but it seems like in the last 5 years, 6 years, there have been kind of new sources of support, which are really, really important. And I think can be a real draw to bring artists to St. Louis or to retain artists to St. Louis. But at the same time, we've lost really important art spaces. And there is this pattern of art spaces opening and closing. And so they're like clearly in, I think in any city, St. Louis included, there needs to be more support, right? Mm-hmm. There needs to be more support for all creatives. And I think the political climate right now is like, that's glaring. But there needs to be more support, not less.
Absolutely.
But I don't know. I really, like, I'm not an expert here on how different St. Louis is from other cities or from other points in time to St. Louis or other cities. Like, I don't think this is a new problem. I don't think it's a problem that's going away. And I don't think it's a problem that has easy answers or easy fixes. I think it's something that just, like, demands continued work and continued conversation and continued like creativity from artists and from stakeholders in the arts community to talk about ways to continually improve and innovate and to find and articulate the value so that more people become stakeholders, because we can't expect people to just give because they should, because they won't. They're you know, dozens and hundreds of other issues that need to be given to two that aren't arts related.
Yeah. And that much is clear. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, especially, so especially as someone who works in installation and sculpture, I mean, maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe you're relying more on sort of the support of things like grants and stuff like that, instead of someone coming in and just saying, I'll take that for for $25 when they should be paying $2,000. But
absolutely. Yeah, and I'm actually really thankful for that, because I find the process and like the responsibility of valuing artwork to be endlessly difficult. Like, I think it's so, it's impossible to calculate what the worth of something is, because that calls brings to mind like so many other philosophical questions and so many other kind of relative answers, where somebody who's loaded thinks that $5,000 is a drop in the bucket, and for somebody who's not, $5,000 is an incredible amount of money. And so the relative value of a chunk of change just depends on the person as much as it does, I mean, before it even has to do with the work itself. So I'm really grateful that I don't have to price my work most of the time. I mean, there are a few exceptions when I'm like participating in fundraisers or benefits or things like that.
Right.
But for the most part, my work lives in this kind of temporary space of a show or an exhibition or an event. And because the stuff is usually pretty large and I don't have the storage space for it, most of the time, 90% of it goes into the dumpster. And I find that to be an incredibly freeing part of my work, because I have to just continually let it go and I don't get attached to the material part of it. I get attached to like the documentation, and that becomes so much more important to me in my work, because I'm trying to really let the experience, even though it's impossible, as much as I can, let the experience live beyond the show or the exhibition where people can actually see it in real life. So
That's great. So what do you think, what do you wish someone would ask you about your art?
I don't know. I feel like any question is a really good question. Mostly just because it starts a conversation, and you know, it can be, why do you make it, or what do you want me to get out of it, or how did you do it, or where did this start?
So what's a common question that you get about that?
Yeah, that's, I don't know. I think, I feel like the most common question might be, why? Like, why this? Like, why did you make this? And that's usually like a process of kind of charting, I'm sure it is for most artists, kind of charting the evolution of like an original question, original like seed of thought, and then the spinning and circling of ideas and references that then help that thing to develop. and become like physical.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. Yeah. And then so all this considered, what is your end game? And you can define that however you want.
That is a question that I have not answered. I would be lying if I knew what my end game was. I think the way that I would answer that is, it kind of goes back to like when I made the decision to make the commitment in the first place, which kind of came in my mid late 20s. And when I made that commitment, I said, I want to keep myself from blaming anything or anyone else or any other situation or condition in my life for being the reason that I didn't make artwork. Mm-hmm. Because this is up to me. This is 100% up to me. Like, at the end of the day, if this doesn't work out, it's because I decided that it wasn't going to work out. So I hold myself entirely accountable for making work and for kind of moving forward and for what the future holds. So at this point, I guess it may not be my end game, but like my continued objective is to continue working to make it sustainable, continue to keep it interesting to myself, continue to develop my own curiosity, because I think that's a much harder thing to do than to say.
Mm-hmm.
To keep the work fresh to yourself means that it can be fresh to somebody else, but as soon as it becomes stale, then, you know, everybody else smells it, you know?
It's true.
Yeah. So I've got to, you know, keep it fresh, and I've got to keep working, and I've got to be relentless about it, because no one else is going to do it for me. And nobody really cares if I stop, you know? Like, really, like, there are a lot of us doing this, and sure, a lot of us trying to make it work. So I've got to just, like, kind of keep that. It's kind of like a, you know, fighter mentality where you're just working it.
You're struggling. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
not necessarily with, like, a negative connotation.
Yeah, yeah.
So do you find that that's all that responsibility? I mean, does that actually empower you to keep going, or is it kind of oppressive? That almost feels like it might be kind of stressful.
I'd say 98% of the time it's empowering.
Yeah.
And then the 2% of the time it's like, why the am I doing this? Right? Which kind of gets back to your first question. Why would you do this to yourself?
Right.
I feel like most of the time it's like the burden is on me and the onus is on me to be efficient, to be quick, to always have things out there, you know, so that when I get a rejection, I know there are 3 more things out there. You know, and it's just a kind of knowing that I'm my own small business person. Like, I'm entrepreneurial. If I had a brick and mortar store, could I just decide to not show up for a couple days that week? No, I couldn't. Like, I've got to keep showing up for myself.
Right.
And I feel like it's also kind of like a commitment to people in my lives. Like, the people that I look at, my friends and family, like, they work hard.
Yeah.
They don't expect people to do things for them, and I shouldn't either, even though the path or the career that I've chosen is wildly different and wildly differently structured than something that's more easily defined. So for the most part it's motivating, but that is kind of a reflection of my personality. Like, I need every day, I need my list with bullet points and check boxes, and I kind of feed off of that sense of accomplishing things.
Mm-hmm.
And I have 2 small kids, so I have to be efficient because they will not let me dawdle, you know.
Yeah.
I have to keep working it, because there are lots of other things. Everybody has their own version of having 2 small children. Like, everybody has the things in their life that pull them away from making work. So I never ever want to use them as an excuse, because everybody has that.
Mm-hmm.
but it keeps it real, you know. Yeah. It's like,
yeah.
Studio time is it's really important, and it can feel like a luxury sometimes because it's hard to come by. So
sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's Megan Grubb, making it work. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
This time it was great. That's it for this episode of 5 Questions. Thanks to Megan Grubb and to you, our listeners and community. Thanks also to Sarah Hammond, who worked on editing, and to Brett Williams, who did sound and production. For those of you who don't know, Critical Mass for the Visual Arts is a nonprofit, self-formed visual arts collaborative dedicated to promoting, enhancing, and initiating contemporary visual art in the St. Louis region. You can get this podcast wherever you get your other podcasts or at criticalmassart.org/5questions, FIVE. And you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Mass STL.